then it's like we say in Israel, what doesn't come through the brain comes through the feet, in a hard way. Sometimes it's easy to catch it, you understand what people told you, you do it, that's it. You don't understand, you have to learn it in a hard way, with bad experiences. What is the punishment in the old days to someone who spoke Lashon Hara? First, if is other than that thing, is a kosher person, that means it's not a thief, it's not stealing, then you see leprosy in the walls of his house. He comes to his house and he sees stains on the walls, leprosy. Should have come on him, but he goes on the wall. That's the next time he ever violates that rule, and he speaks again, he goes to his clothes. All of a sudden he looks at his jacket or whatever he wears, and he sees leprosy on the clothes. And the third time, if he continues one more time, it goes on his body, and that's already very, very risky. Why? Because guess what happens when it happens to a person's body? First thing is being isolated. They send him out of the nation of Israel to a special place, what we call in our days today a jail, a special place. He can't come out of there. He's not free anymore. He loses rights for a certain time until he gets cured. But you may think once finally it leaves the body, his problems are over. The answer is no, his problems are not over yet. Then what? This is what the Torah says. After his cure in his body, you have to bring him to the Kohen. The Kohen in Hebrew means a servant of God. In English, when you want to translate the word Kohen, you call him a high priest. That means a servant of God. It's true that only certain Jews from the family of Aaron, the Kohen, can be the servants of God in a Beit HaMikdash and in certain other holy ceremonies. But in general, the word Kohen is not necessarily someone from the family of Aaron, a Kohen. Because we found some places that somebody named the Kohen, even though he wasn't a Kohen. That means a messenger, a servant of God. Once they bring the person who got leprosy because he spoke, it could be one sentence of Lashon Hara. See how much suffering from one sin. They bring him to the Kohen, and the Kohen has to take two birds, and now this is exactly what I said before. Now you see the Torah is not from human being, it has to be from the Creator of the world, because you never have an idea, no human being will have in his mind to invent such things. It's above human. It's nothing from this world. It's something, it's all a secret. We'll never understand it until we finally come to the world of truth, then we understand what's going on here. But pay attention to the details. The Kohen has to take two birds. Two birds. What does he do with the two birds? Two pure birds. And he takes the birds, and he takes a special tree, what we call Erev. In Hebrew, that's the name of it, Erev. And then he takes a shnit or lak vezov. This is all kinds of things, materials. It could be cedar wood, but just to get the idea, it doesn't really matter what it is, just to get the idea. Some ingredients, a tree and something that is made from a worm, and a zov, it's another material in nature. And then what happened? The Kohen is slaughtering the first bird. He killed the bird in a kosher way, he slaughtered it. And then they take some water, natural water, not water from a faucet like today. It has to be from a spring or from rain that fell into a hole or something like that. Natural water, the same thing like we have in a mikveh. Mikveh for women, that's what he takes. And he mixes the blood of the bird with that water. And then he has, remember, one more bird that is still alive. Then he takes the bird that is still alive, with that piece of tree, the cedar tree, whatever, the Etza Erev, and the Shnia Tolat, the material from a worm, Veta Ezov, which is another ingredient, and he takes them, all of them together, with the living bird, with the blood of the dead bird, and he puts them together in the water, that means he mixed it, and then he takes from that water, which is, it looks like a red soup now, remember, it's blood with water. He takes from that and he splashes seven times on that leprosy person, And then he sent, he released the living bird free. He sent the bird free, and then they take the clothes of the person and put it inside the mikveh. Once they clean the clothes, that means they purify the clothes, the next step is they have to shave all the hair from the body of that person, not leave one hair. They shave the hair. And then he goes into the mikveh or spring water. And then after he goes in, he becomes, not that day, he waits until the evening, and then he becomes pure. Then he can enter back into his family, back to his home, back to the street, in the nation of Israel. But he cannot enter his house yet. Remember, they used to have tents. He has to be out of his home for 7 days. 7 days out. And in the 7 day, what after 7 day, his hair grew. In a week, a little bit hair grew. He has to reshave everything. Also his beard, which is a huge embarrassment for a person. Today, no one is embarrassed that he doesn't have beard. But until 100 years ago, you couldn't find anybody in the world without beard. The Goyim, the wicked Jews, they all had beard. Even Herzl, he has a picture in the Israeli Knesset, a very wicked person, and he has a beard. All of those Zionists that were anti, the communists that were anti-Torah, they had beard. Nobody dared to walk on the street without a beard. If a person would remove his beard, right away the kids in the street would run after him and point at him, he's crazy, he's mishugene. He's crazy, he's a woman, what's going on here? Even by the goyim. Until it became fashion, like every other cancer that comes to society. But in the old days, such a tragedy for that person, they shave his beard, he can't come to the street, he can't go to his office, he can't go to work. One sentence of Lashon Hara, look what he has to go through. And then, they shave his eyebrows. They don't leave one hair in his body. And then he goes again, he puts his clothes again in a what we call laundry, it's a mikveh. Purifies clothes again. He goes into the mikveh, and it's not over yet. Then he has to take two goats, shnei kvasim, two lambs actually, perfect. They have to be perfect. They don't have any kind of broken bone, or the lung is not smooth, or something like that. Because maybe after you slaughter it, you find that it's not kosher, you lost the money. It's another $400. You have to bring another one. It could be seven. You slaughter them, and they're not kosher. He has to, after all the slaughtering, he still has to have two kosher ones. Think about the process. And then another female lamb, 1 year old, perfect, with no damage, no problems. And then they take solid bulgur, I think it's bulgur in English, mixed with oil, and about 1 quart of oil, something like that. And the Kohen sacrifices it in front of Hashem, and so forth and so on. Then, in the end of all this process, he takes the Kohen from the blood of that lamb that he slaughtered, and he put it on that person's ear, on the right ear. Does it make sense so far what I told you? What is the connection between all this to Lashon Hara? We will never know. No human being will ever think to invent such a thing. What for? That's just enough for those who have a little brain in their head to understand the power of our Torah. Why? Because if a human being would make it up and try to bring these kinds of laws to millions of people, in less than 10 minutes he will be dead. Because they will put him in a mental house. Nobody would do it. Say, you crazy? I swear, I spoke Lashon Hara, leave me alone. What is this? What do you want? You want money? I'll make it up to you. Okay, what did you lose? You lost business? Here is $1,000, leave me alone. What is this? Shave my Bible. What's going on here? The fact that millions of people adopted it right away, that means something really happened there. God came down, everyone saw it, like I always tell you, almost in every lecture, that's enough. You don't need scientific proof. You need scientific proof, get my video and watch. But without it, it's enough. Just if you read the Torah, and if you have some common sense, you come down to only one conclusion. Who could have invented all these rules? But the second thing we learn from this parasha, other than the Torah, it's divine, we learn one other thing, the power of a sin. how much a person is going to suffer for one little sin, one little sentence. You know, Moshe is not a good guy. That's all. He has to go through these whole process. If he's a rich man, he has businesses, he has meetings, he's the president of Microsoft, forget it, he's going to lose millions because of one sentence. Nobody cares. He's isolated. And then once he shaved his beard, it takes 3-4 months until he grow a normal beard. He cannot come like this to his business. One time in the time of King David, read by King David, his soldier went somewhere and they caught them and they shaved half of their beard. Half, to make fun of them. That was the punishment. Instead of killing them, they say it's better we shave half of their beard than to kill them. That's how bad it was to get rid of a beard. And when they came to King David, they said, what are we going to do? He said, go somewhere, hide until your beard grow, and then come back. Why? Sometimes it's better to die than to be embarrassed in front of millions. And that's why Lashon Hara had such a serious sin. And the Gemara says, unfortunately, that's already 2,000 years ago, almost everyone's fallen into that trap of the Satan. The Satan is a genius, and he's just fooling us. He's fooling us, and we always repeat the same mistake and the same mistake, and we gain terrible points and so forth and so on. So this is just a little bit about the parasha. There's a lot more to say, but that's not the subject tonight.
Tonight, as I say,
we are speaking about a very important holiday, what we call Passover, Pesach. There's many, many mitzvot connect to that Pesach from the 630 mitzvot that we have. One of them is, we have to clean the chametz before Pesach starts. That's one mitzvah from the Torah, Levaer ta chametz. Then, we have two others. That mitzvah called Tashbitu Seor Mibatechem. You make sure there's no chametz in your home. Then there's another sin, which called Lo Yerae Lecha Chametz. It's another version in the Torah. It's called Lo Yerae Lecha Chametz. You should not see any chametz in your territory. And another place in the Torah, it speaks in a different language. Lo Yimatzeh Lecha Chametz. You will not have any chametz in your territory. Different language. You should know one thing. A person may do everything in the right way. Perfect. Perfect Leil HaSeder. Perfect preparation. Everything is perfect. But he forgot one wafer somewhere. Or, you know, like anything chametz somewhere. It could be almost 2 million sins in 1 week. Probably more than he would do without Pesach in all his life. 1 week. That's why I told people tonight, you want to come and write comments and notes. Why? Because if you don't know how to prepare for this holiday, if you don't care, you don't care. You don't care, you don't do anything. Then it's not your place. But if you care about yourself, and obviously everyone cares about themselves. Why? Because everyone is saving for the future. Why? People want better future. You worry about yourself. You worry what's going to be, because you love yourself. If you wouldn't love yourself, you wouldn't save money. You wouldn't save, you wouldn't make all kinds of pension plans, investments, this, what do you need that for? You die, you die, you starve, what do you care? Since you love yourself, you love your children, it's like normal, you worry about the future. But there is something that is more important, to worry about the future in the right things. Not only financials and materials. The right things, that means the life of eternity, what we call spiritual, spirituality. And this is one of these important mitzvot, is Chag Pesach. If a person didn't clean his house right, and he left chametz in his house, more than 1 ounce chametz, every second is 3 sins from the Torah. Every second, it's called like this, 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, for 8 days. Who wants to take that risk? That's question number one. There is certain, I told you last week I made a preview about this week's lecture. If a person, there are certain sins that a person does that every second count as a new sin, such as non-kosher mezuzah in one of the doors, or he doesn't have mezuzah at all. So he may have 9 other mezuzot, which create for him 9 mitzvot every second, but at the same time he has 1 door that creates 1 sin every second. who wants to gain millions of sins in a lifetime, billions of sins, for $50-$60? Think about it. So that's one thing. Also sharpness, we spoke about it months ago. Every second you wear, actually by sharpness is a little bit easier, because it's not 100% every second, it's every 10 seconds count a sin. Why? The time it takes to remove your clothes and put it back on, every time it's a new sin. Because you could have taken it off. The time that you had to take it off and you didn't, it counts. It's like you put it on again and again and again. Why you ignore that sin? And of course, there's an intentional sin, non-intentional sin. The reward and the punishment for the mitzvot, it always connects to one thing, if you did it purposely or not. But that doesn't mean if you didn't have in mind to do it, or you didn't know, that doesn't mean you're released from the punishment. Punishment is there. It may be a little bit easier, but it's there. This year, Pesach is even more interesting than other years. That means there's a lot of rules that are different than other years because it falls on Saturday night, Motzei Shabbat. That means usually we prepare the most in the day before Pesach, before Leil HaSeder, and this year since it's Shabbat, we have to prepare everything in advance. That means Thursday night we start, Friday we do some, and then on Shabbat we have to already be ready for the Pesach. The month of Nisan, you should know, it's the first month, HaChodesh La'azeh Lachem Rosh Chodashim, that's the first month of the month of the year. There's few things that comes before Pesach. One is called Birkat HaIlanot. The first leaves comes out of the trees. We go to a tree that has fruits, and we make a special blessing for the trees. Why? The secret behind that blessing is because there's a lot of souls that are being reincarnated in the trees and in a fruit. And by doing that, it helps them. That's one reason. There's other reasons for that. We thank God that the trees are regrowing leaves and everything is beautiful, and so forth and so on. Let's call Birkat HaIlanot. And then we enter into the Pesach, and this Shabbat, the Shabbat before Pesach, we call Shabbat HaGadol, the big Shabbat of the year. A special Shabbat from the 52 Shabbatot that we have, that's a very special Shabbat. It's called Shabbat HaGadol. In old shoes, the rabbis carry a long lecture, longer than usual, preparing the people for that special holiday, what we call Pesach. Pesach is one of the three regalim. We have Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuot. Those three holidays are special. What's so special about them? In the time of Beit HaMikdash, when there used to be the Holy Temple, people left everything and went to celebrate in Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, where the Western Wall is today, right above there, when the Muslims have their mosque. That's when the Beit HaMikdash was standing, and everyone brought their gifts to Beit HaMikdash, and they celebrate over there in Beit HaMikdash. It was something very special, it's called Shloshet HaRegalim. The Torah, when the Torah speaks about those three special holidays, the Torah gives us a promise that it's amazing to see the promise that the Torah gave. What is it? That God says, Shalosh pa'amim bashana, three times a year, when you come to see my face. When you ba'alotcha lirot et pnei Hashem Elokecha be'ar ha'bchira, when you go to see the beauty and the glory of your God in a chosen mountain, the Moriah mountain, that's where the Western Wall is. Lo yachmot goy et ha'artzecha. You will never have any war and any delegation, any problem with the goyim, with the Gentiles that are around Israel. This is what it means. Pay attention. There will be thousands of wars with the goyim. Always. You're always going to be in a problem with them. They always want the Holy Land. Everyone wants that peace. Everyone. But I'm interested that you come to Jerusalem three times a year to celebrate with me, with the Spirit of Hashem. And I know you. Not celebrate with this kind of music. Celebrate with better music. We're speaking about celebrations. Anyway, So, that's okay. Anyway, the bottom line is, Hashem says, everyone comes to celebrate with me, but people are people, and people have lack of faith in Hashem. They worry, what's going to be with the house, the robbers, what's going to be with the border of Israel? The goyim wants to attack. They're looking for a chance to attack. So this is a promise in the Torah. No matter when you come to celebrate in those three holidays, in the time that the Beit HaMikdash exists, the Holy Temple is standing, no goyim, no Gentiles will ever attack the Holy Land. I promise. I will prevent that from happening. That you can come and leave your home and leave the border. Pay attention. Every male born from 13 years and older, 13 years old and up, has to come to Jerusalem, leaves everything, leaves school, leaves everything, go. Everyone is in Jerusalem. The goyim, believe me, they knew then Torah more than what we know today. I promise you, every goyim knew more Torah than me 2,000 years ago. Very simple, because they were very interested in it. They translated to their language, they were learning it. You see. You see by their comments in their books from approximately 1,700-1,800 years ago that the goyim knew a lot of Torah. Even today, I have goyim that knows a lot of Torah. You even have goyim that learn Gemara, you know that? It's all kinds of goyim in the world that learn Talmud. So, the goyim see, they're standing right there where is Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, all these places. You stand on the mountain, you see, for those who went to Israel, there's a sense. You are in Israel here. 5 steps away, it's Jordan already. That's it. See, regular fence. Right there, Jordan. So he's standing over there. He sees the soldiers of King Solomon or King Hezekiah, or all the kings in the time of Beit HaMikdash. Everyone left his job. They left everything. There's no weapon, no horses, nothing. They left and they went to Jerusalem. What was preventing this goyim from attacking the land? Anyway, they did it in between the holidays for 830 years. Not once they came when the Jews were in Jerusalem. How can it be? The answer to that is very simple. Because God promised and God kept His promise. For the Jews to have a clean mind and be in Jerusalem. In between, there was plenty of wars. In the time of the Regalim, no wars. Lo yachmod goy et arzecha. Does any human being can make such a promise? Obviously not. We continue. In the time of Beit HaMikdash, you should know that in the evening before Leil HaSeder, they used to prepare the sacrifice, Korban HaPesach. And then all the Jews were making groups. Let's see, it's you and the neighbors and the family. You count how many people per lamb. And you have to know in advance how many people, and you have to count them, and to know how many people will participate in this celebration, which called Korban HaPesach. If a person is not pure because of those reasons, that means he cannot participate in this celebration. That's why God gave them a second chance a month later after Pesach. It's called Pesach Sheni, second Passover. 1 month exactly after Pesach, we have an opportunity for those in the time of Beit HaMikdash who couldn't eat Korban HaPesach and miss the mitzvah to come to Jerusalem again and participate and do it again. That's called Pesach Sheni. Even today, as a memory of that second Pesach, when it comes, which is 30 days after, in the month of Iyar, the 15th of Iyar, we don't say Vidui, we don't say Tachnun. Why? It's a memory of that holiday. That God gave an opportunity. Even converts that didn't go yet to the mikveh, even though they were circumcised or whatever, they still cannot participate. Unless if they pure 100%. They went into the mikveh and came out, then they can participate for the Korban HaPesach. In Pesach, there, in the night of Pesach, there is 4 mitzvot. 2 from the Torah and 2 from Rabbanan. Which one are the 2 mitzvot from the Torah? One is to eat matzah, kabeitzah, which is 2 ounces matzah at least, that night. Also we eat in Leil HaSeder, Passover night. And in the exile, we have to do it 2 nights in a row. In Israel, they do it only 1 night. But all over the world, They have to do it twice. It's called Yom Tov Sheni. But originally it was supposed to be one night. And then the first night, it's from the Torah. It's very important to eat 2 ounces of matzah, and there's ways to eat it. We're going to get into the halachot soon. Plus, there is another very important mitzvah, which is the whole Pesach, what is it about? To speak to your children and to the family members and to your guests. But first, before everyone else, is your children. The mitzvah from the Torah to sit as long as you can, even until the morning, and tell them the story of the Exodus of Egypt. Every word you say, it's a mitzvah. You can't miss that mitzvah. It's one zeir, you have this opportunity. V'igata lebincha b'yom ahu, as a memory, as an appreciation of God taking us out of Egypt. You should never forget that we used to be slaves in Egypt, and God released us. You should know also one thing, that every mitzvah, every important mitzvah in Judaism is a memory of the Exodus of Egypt. Zecher Litziat Mitzrayim, Tfilin, Shabbat, we say Kiddush, Zecher Litziat Mitzrayim. Circumcision, Zecher Litziat Mitzrayim, everything Zecher Litziat Mitzrayim. As a memory of the Exodus of Egypt, such an important mitzvah, this Exodus of Egypt. So appreciate it. So there's 2 mitzvot from the Torah. One is to eat matzah, kosher matzah, not egg matzah, or all kinds of matzot that are maybe, some matzot are chametz, you know, you should know. You read on the box. If it doesn't say kosher for Passover, that means the Ashkenazim, for instance, eat matzah almost every Shabbat in Seudah Shlishit, in some shuls. It's matzah, they make a motzi on it, that's their tradition. So some matzot is not kosher, you have to be very careful which matzot you buy. The best, if you can afford it, and even if you can afford it, trust God, He has enough money to reimburse you for that, is to buy matzah shmura, even though it's very expensive, approximately $15, $16, $17 a pound, very expensive, it comes to be between $2 and $3 per matzah. Yes, and the ingredients doesn't even cost them 5 cents, but it's an unbelievable job. You should know that. They have to prepare 2-3 months in advance matzot. They take a bakery, they make it strictly kosher without any chametz, and it's very, very hard work, very hard, and they work like machines, running day and night until they almost collapse. That's a very hard job. Why? Because there's one guy cleaning the board, and one guy keeps on touching the door until his finger is broken. All day it goes like this. The other one is washing, the other one taking it in and out. And they have to be extra, extra careful that it won't fall in the oven, because if it falls, there's some flours in it. And what happens, that flour is not cooked. And if it's not cooked, that means it rises after 18 minutes and you have a matzah with chametz. You ate bread on Pesach. Shchas v'shalom, if you did it intentionally, it's correct. So remember, there are 2 mitzvot from the Torah. It's the story about Egypt. And the other one is matzah. Excuse me, sir. Can you sit, please? Thank you. Okay. The next 2 mitzvot is from the Rabbanan. From the Rabbanan, that means from our sages, the rabbis, what are they? Eating maror, which is the end of the letters, which is bitter, maror. And 4 cups of wine. 4 cups of wine as a memory of 4 different salvations from the empires of the Goim, Arba Leshonot Shel Geula. 4 cups of wine. There's big secrets about the wine. I don't want to get into it. We have to focus on the things that we have to know how to do Pesach. So remember, 2 and 2. 4 all together, and we have it for 2 nights in a row. Now let's start to go into the details of Pesach. You should know also, stop walking, I don't know whose set is this. Yes. Huh? Yeah, call the other door. Amen. Sorry, I did it walk. Okay. Doesn't work, I don't know. Anyway, the sign from the horoscope is Aries, Taleh, like a goat. Why is it falling on Passover? It's a memory of the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach. Now you should know one thing. In Egypt, we always say in Hebrew, Shamitrim, the Egyptians, made the life of our grandfathers in Egypt very, very bitter, very hard. Vidu otam beparech. Parech means very hard work. They made them work very, very hard work. So everyone thinking the work was heavy, heavy weight in the heat, and they were beating them up, which is also true. But the secret behind that, what does it mean? Parech, perach, soft mouth, tricky mouth. How did they start to make millions of Jews that living in a country? Just imagine the situation here in the United States, that the Americans wants to make the 3-4 million Jews that live here slaves. But you know, there's constitution, there's democracy, same story. How do you make them into slaves? You can't just come and make a law because they may rebel against you, it's going to cause a lot of problems. So you first announce that you want people to come to work and build the pyramids or the palaces of the king with full price. You pay money. Not only that, the king, Paro, the king, himself came to work. We read, he came himself to work with the people. And it was a regular job. And later on, you were already into that problem and they made you there and you couldn't get out of there. When did the problem started? When the Jews came to Egypt, when did they live, the Jews? Where did they live? In the city of Goshen. The city of Goshen is like you're saying, you take yourself a separate territory and you go live there. You do not mix and do not mingle with the Gentiles, with the Goyim, with the Egyptians at all. And that was the idea of Yosef. And when his family came, 70 people in the beginning, he told them, listen, when they ask you what is your profession, you say you're shepherds. Shepherds, you take care of the sheep, or etzon. Why? The Egyptians cannot stand shepherds. Why? Because who's their god? The goats, the lamb, that's their god. They bow down to them. And people who take care of them, for them it's something very, very gentle. Same thing like in India today, with the cows. But over there was with the goats. Later, the Jews decided to go and live all over Egypt. They don't want to be in a ghetto. Remember, in Europe, the Jews purposely made themselves ghettos. It wasn't the idea of the going. The Jews made it up. They didn't want to mix with them. They knew it was going to cause a problem, intermarriage. They made a fence, they bought a place, and they lived over there. Like they have in Florida, private neighborhoods. You know, it's around, that's how they did. That's our neighborhood. Nobody comes in, nobody goes out other than the Jews. That's it. That's how it was. So the Jews were the same thing in Egypt. And then later they say, what's the big deal? Let's start moving in near the beach, near here, near the lake. It's beautiful. Why are you going to be in the same place? Come on, Rabbi, don't be fanatic. They started to move all over. A few years later, the Egyptian said, what's going on? The Jews are controlling everything here. Sounds familiar, no? Like in Germany, like here today, like in Russia. All the places, when the Jews are all over, they're all of a sudden waking themselves up. So what's going on here? Look, he comes to the bank, a Jew. They go here, the lawyer is a Jew, the judge is a Jew, the vice president, what's going on? Too much. Let's do something about it. That's the language of the Torah. That's the language of the Torah. Let's do something before it's too late. Though they multiply like crazy, these Jews. 17 kids in a family. Soon, they're going to be more than us. What happened? The slavery started. And later, the Jews are working for 210 years. 210 years, it's few generations already. And what did they do? The job of the male, they gave it to the female. And the job of the female, they gave it to the male. Mentally to destroy them. It was mentally harder more than physically. That's how they used to do it. And eventually we know the story. Hashem sends Moshe Rabbeinu to save them. But then before Moshe Rabbeinu is able to take them out of Egypt, there's a period of 1 year of 10 plagues. Start with blood, dam, shardea, kinim, 10 different plagues. Plagues? That's how you say it. Plagues? Plagues, 10 different plagues. 10 different plagues until the last plague is what? Every firstborn in Egypt is falling and dying. And in some families, In some families, two people are falling. Two kids are falling. Why two? Because this woman had two firstborn. One from this husband and one from the husband she cheated with. Yes, yes. All of a sudden, her husband comes home, you see two kids falling. So one is really his boy. The other one, how he died, is a male firstborn from another man. And he falls down and dies. That's what happened. Everywhere, people are dying. So the Egyptians came and brought their firstborn into the Jewish house. They say, you put blood near the mezuzah, and the angel of death will not touch this house. But what happened, even with the blood, the Egyptians that were hiding their children by the Jews, they still end up in the Jews' house. That's how it happened. It's the time, it's hard really to imagine. Because just try to imagine one scenario, that you are now in America, and there is water all over. You have your own house, you open the faucet, water comes out. Like me, your neighbor, the American guy, you say, hey, you have some water for me? I'm trying to get some water, it's all red. So the Jew fill out a bottle, and he gives him a bottle. As soon as he touches, it becomes blood. So the Jews started to make millions. When the Jews left Egypt, they cleaned them out from all the money. And now even in Egypt, Hosni Mubarak, a few years ago, believe it or not, they wanted to make a lawsuit against the money that the Jews took out of Egypt. And it's not the first time, yes. And it's not the first time, because in the time of the Gemara, they also came claiming, you clean us out, now you have to give it after 1300 years, you have to pay it with interest. So the Jews sent one of the guys, the Gemara. He went to debate with them and he said, okay, let's calculate millions of Jews times 16 hours a day, how much is in an hour? Now let's, you first pay us for the time we work and then we'll think about the rest. Okay, go. That's what it is. So the Jews, not only that, the Egyptians themselves, when the Jews left, the leftover, the silver and the gold, they gave it to them. Here, take it out. Why? After 1 year that they go and saw what God did for those nations, they say, you know what? You deserve it. Take it. But before, the Jews made business. You want water? You have to buy. You want these animals I have, you don't have. Certain things, they started to make business. If you know, I have here a papyrus that was found by the archaeologists that an Egyptian called Ipovar, an Egyptian, 3,317 years ago, 1 year before we received the Torah, approximately a few months before, and the time of the plagues, he was writing a note. Yes, he was writing it. It was found by the Goyim, by the archaeologists. They translated what he writes, exactly what the Torah is about to say later, the description of the 10 plagues and the exodus of Egypt. One of the things he writes that all the animals died. And before they died, all the Egyptians were running on the street looking for the cows, because each cow, they used to make a tattoo with a number on a cow to know which belongs to you. Everyone has his list to know what's mine, what's yours. So they made a stamp. So everyone was running because the cows, the animals were running all over. And they were looking for them. And then he writes, the enemies of the land, which is us, the Jews, the enemies of the lands have a pole of fire and a cloud that goes and they follow it. He writes. And that's before the Torah was written. A few months later, when we get out of Egypt, you can read it in the Torah. This is the story of Egypt. The Jews came out, the Egyptians drowned, and so forth and so on. I'm skipping a lot with that because I'm sure you heard a lot of that, but let's get now to business. We have to know how to prepare, yes. We get to that now. The first thing, before we get into the laws of Pesach, we know that every year, every firstborn Jew has to fast in the evening before Pesach. That means in the day before. That means it should have been on Friday this year. But Friday is the day that goes into Shabbat, we don't fast. So it was moved earlier to Thursday. Since it's not on the original date, it's much, much easier, the law of the fasting. In general, you should know that every year that we have to fast is only for male, firstborn male, that means he's the firstborn in a family. And that's only when it falls the night, the day before Leil HaSeder. This year, it's easier. When a person wants to get rid of this fasting, because it's not that easy to come into the night of the Seder, when you didn't eat all day, and now you have to drink 4 cups of wine on an empty stomach. So what's the solution? The solution is that he goes in the morning, let's say Passover night is Wednesday, right? So Wednesday morning he goes, if it's Wednesday night, that means Thursday already, right? Wednesday night, according to our calendar, it's already Thursday. So he goes in the morning on Wednesday, and he goes to a shul, and almost every shul and yeshiva, they finish a masechet from the Gemara. They make it few masechet. Every time they finish a masechet in the Gemara, masechet Shabbat, masechet Brachot, masechet Ta'anit, whatever it is, they make a celebration. They bring some kosher for Pesach, cookies and wine, and they make like a little meal in the morning, and once you hear the end of the masechet, the last stage of the Gemara, you eat, you drink, you make Sheborei Pri HaGefen, you make whatever she'akol on those cookies, and you don't have to fast. This year, it's even easier, especially for Sephardim. The Ashkenazim is more strict about this, their tradition, but everyone who's Sephardic, if it's hard for him to fast, he doesn't have to fast. Of course, it's better to go to listen to a few masechet, because that's according to all opinions. But if it's hard, or you missed it, or whatever, and it's hard for you to fast, you don't have to fast. That's for Sephardim. Ashkenazim, they fast. When? On Thursday. If they don't want to fast, the Ashkenazim, they go and they listen to an ending of the Gemara called few masechet. Now this year, since it's much easier, you can also hear few masechet of Mishnayot, not the Gemara. The Gemara is much harder. Siyum Masechet of Mishnayot is much, much easier. They can learn a day and make Siyum Masechet. In a day, they can finish the whole Masechet of Mishnayot. So if they make a Siyum Masechet of Mishnayot, it's also good, but only this year. That's one thing about Ta'anit Bechorot.
So no fasting.
If
you... Now explain. Is it good to fast or is it
good to fast? In general, you should know one thing. One of the greatest things for repentance is fasting. Today, however, it's not so popular. Why? Because the people are much, much weaker than before. Just to give you an idea, in the time of the Gemara, there were thousands of rabbis that were fasting from Shabbat to Shabbat. Do not eat all week. And learn from morning to night non-stop. Do not eat only on Shabbat this week. Even they, I never saw it, but some told me, even the Bava Sali, Rabbi Israel Abu Chatzera, was only eating on Shabbatot. He was hardly eating anything. Just on Shabbatot, that's why he was very skinny. If you see him in a picture, it's about 85, 90 pounds. Nothing. Maybe water, I don't know, I'm not sure. Very hard. Today, you fast one day. Today, if you fast 1 or 2 days, that's it, it's a life risk. Oh, it started to work at least.
So from Thursday morning till Thursday sunset, if you can, no.
So that means from Sunday morning to the next Shabbat, Friday night, they used to fast. Today, one day you fast, you can't learn anymore. In the yeshivot, at 1, 2 o'clock, you already see the people are dizzy. Why? It's very hard because your brain is working very, very hard, and if you don't drink tea, coffee, something, it's very hard to learn. So you see right away, when the day of the fast, 2 o'clock, half of the yeshiva becomes empty. Why? It's very hard. So it's like Rav Ovadia Yosef say, today when the generation, the people are very weak, it's better to fast only when you have to. Don't add more fast on you. It's better you sit and learn Torah, it's better than to fast. So just an idea, to give you an idea, in the old days the fast was a very good day of repentance. In the time of the Shovavim, there's a few weeks, that it's a correction for wasting seeds all this week. They used to fast every Monday and Thursday. That's a very old tradition. Let's not get into that strict stuff. Let's just get into the thing we have to do. The rest is up to you. You want to do more, you do more. So now, this is the preparation, what we call Bdikat Hametz. After you clean the house, from A to Z, you do not leave anything that has Hametz in the house. Now I know a lot of you in previous years, you used to go to the rabbi in your neighborhood and used to sell the chametz to a goy for you. You come, you tell them, we put it in that closet, we put a tape, machur le goy, and that you become, the rabbi gives you a form, you sign, he asks you what's the value, how much is the value of the chametz that you're selling to a goy. You estimated it, you have 2 bottles of whiskey, and you have spaghetti, some pita bread, whatever you left over there, and you sign how much it worth, and the rabbi sells it to a goy. However, it's very, very not recommended to count on that sale. The only way you use that sale is if you really don't have a choice. Some people think it's a mitzvah to keep chametz in a closet, that we can sell it to the goy, because that's a part of the holiday, we used to. No, no, no. This is only as a last solution. Now you're going to learn something new you may never knew before. Since every second of Pesach is 3 sins from the Torah, 2 restrictions and 1 positive mitzvah that you violate, the last thing you want is to leave so much chametz and count on that sale to a goy. Because there's a lot of arguments in the last generations about how valid is that certificate that you sell it to a goy. That's number one. So now here is my recommendation to you. If you do not have any expensive chametz, such as many bottles of whiskey, expensive bottles, don't ever leave any chametz in the house because you want to sell it to a goy. No. 2 or 3 weeks before Pesach, you begin to eat everything until you come to the last 2 or 3 days of Pesach, of the days before Pesach, you already have a house clean of chametz. No spaghetti, you cook it, no pita, no pizza in the freezer, no, none of that. You got rid of wafers, you got rid of the cookies. The only way to count on that sale, if you're a collector of whiskey, which is not recommended for a Jew to be a collector of whiskey, but let's say you got a lot of gifts, and they're very expensive, the bottles, and you have 20, 30 bottles, it's very hard to throw them or to get rid of them before. If it would be me, if I had even 30 bottles of whiskey, I wouldn't sell it to a goy. I would sell it to a goy before Pesach. I know some Peters and Johns, I would say, here, this is a bottle worth $40, give me 30, take it. Get rid of them before Pesach. Do not stuff the house with whiskey bottles, because coming Pesach, it's a very big problem.
Sell it and buy it back?
You can sell it to him and buy it back. That's the best way.
Vodka also?
Okay, now vodka depends. Some vodka is chametz, some is not. You have to check the ingredients. Some is made from wheat. I don't know exactly. I'm not a producer of vodkas. I know most cognac is not chametz, but maybe some of them is. You have to check by the ingredients. Beer, for sure it's chametz. All the beers, black beer, white beer, all the beers, get rid of. Spaghetti, cookies, bread, any kinds of those things, it's all chametz.
Rice
is not chametz. For Ashkenazim, rice is not allowed on Pesach. For Sfaradim, is allowed. There are some Sfaradim that also don't eat rice on Pesach. Either way, you don't want enriched rice. Why? Because they take the rice and they clean it with flour to make it white. The rice, you have to make sure that when you buy rice, it's not enriched with flour. By law, in the United States, they have to tell you if it's enriched with flour, because some people are allergic to it. And if one person cannot eat a wheat, flour, and you don't tell him and he eats it, he may die. That's going to be millions of dollars lawsuit. So they have to tell you if they use flour to do it. Either way, we wash the rice very good. Now, for those who eat rice, you have to check the rice 3 times before. Why? Because in the time where they make the rice, they collect it, there is also next to it in the same factory wheat. And what happened? It flies all over. Remember, it's an open place and things are flying all the time. Almost always, when you take a bunch of rice and you start searching through them, you're going to see wheat. All it means is that you have 1 little wheat in it, which looks like rice but brown or black, whatever. One. And you cook it, and you put water and you cook it. That one made the whole rice chametz. You eat on Pesach chametz, chas v'shalom. Now what's the punishment of a person who eats chametz and Pesach purposely? Chas v'shalom, the worst in Judaism, the worst, correct. Chas v'shalom. Someone who eats chametz on Yom Kippur, in Pesach, it's like eating on Yom Kippur. Same thing. It's like chas v'shalom not observing the Sabbath, also correct. And so other, there's a list of sins that the punishment for them is karet, which is the worst. If it's not intentional, it's not karet, but it's a very big sin. Your whole Pesach is ruined for eating chametz on Pesach. So I have to be very careful, I have to check it 3 times to make sure there's not one. After you clean it 100%, you wash it very good, then you can use flour, then you can use rice. I know to tell Bukhari not to use rice is to destroy them completely. So I'm not even there to tell them that. No problem, you eat rice, but make sure you clean it very well, yes. Oil you can use, oil, it's kosher, it's not chametz. Oil you use. Now, remember we're going back, just we'll finish one issue at a time. To sell it to a goy, it's as a last solution. It's only if you know you have very expensive chametz, and you hate to get rid of it, then you put it in a closet, you write in a list, and you sell it to a goy. Now why that sale is not so recommended, I'll explain now how it works. The rabbi of the neighborhood, each one of them has a goy that he does business with. He comes to Vini before the holiday and he tells him, "Hello Vini, how are you? I have a great deal for you. What's the deal? Look, you see this list? It's 500 members of my shul. See, for a field, a lot of nice Jews live here and they have a lot of things to sell you for very, very cheap price. What is it? Okay, let's see. The first one, he lives in that house and he has in a closet 2 packs of cookies, 4 packs of wafers, 1 bottle of whiskey and 4 bottles of beer. All together it's $25. And he adds it up and it comes to $1 million, let's say. After all the people in the community, $1 million. So you only have to give me today $1 and it's all yours. But in 8 days from now, that means the night that Pesach is over, you come with the rest of the money. If you didn't bring the money, then the deal is over. That means you have to return it back to me. It was yours for the 8 days, but since you didn't bring the rest of the money, the down payment that you gave, we have to give it back to you and we buy the chametz back from you. Now, there's only one problem in this kind of business. The problem is, if Vini is a person, is a book smart, he goes by the book, he knows he signed a deal, he prepares already the rest of the money. But he doesn't really have to give the money until the end of Pesach. If Vini comes with his semi-trailer to your home, to the supermarket, whatever, in the middle of the Chol HaMoed, right after the holidays, or even in the holidays, he comes and knocks down on the rabbi's door, "Rabbi, I came to collect all my chametz. Where is it? Show me now these places." Then you have a very big problem. Why? Because when he comes to the supermarket, let's say, and he has tons of chametz, corn flakes, this, wheat, all kinds of things, and he comes and says, "Mr. Mendlovitz, how are you? I came to pick up the chametz. Where is all the things?" "Oh, no, not now. You come after." No, I got it. I have a party. I have to get it. Come on, where is it?" Would the Jew will let him take it or not? That's the big question. If yes, then you have no problem with this deal. I know and you know that probably there's not one Jew in the world that will let him take it. "What do you want? You're not supposed to come. You didn't understand with the rabbi." You come to fool Hashem, it's not going to work. Therefore, very dangerous this sale. Very dangerous. On top of it, it makes it even worse because remember, in the plate absorbs chametz. You eat boiling spaghetti on a plate. And it's a ceramic plate. China, whatever you call it. It absorbs the oil with the spaghetti. It's chametz, complete chametz. It's in the plate. Even though you wash it with everything, with the dishwasher, it's in. If you heat it up now, you're going to see how the plate has some moisture on it. What is this? This is complete chametz. In the contract, the rabbi writes to Vini that he buys all the liquid and everything that absorbed in the plate, he also buys it. Why he doesn't buy the whole plate? It's a problem. If you buy the whole plate, in the end of Pesach, it's considered that you bought it back from a goy. And now you have to take it to a mikveh. Imagine you have hundreds of plates, in the end of the deal doesn't work it. You have to take all the plates back to the mikveh. So they made a provision in the contract that he doesn't really buy the plates, he only buys the dirt. How many goyim in the world you know that is willing to buy the dirt that you have in your plate? And that's it. And that's why I say to whoever is clever, this really, you know, when this contract is a little bit older than 200 years old, that's all. In the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, nobody made contracts with the goyim to sell them the chametz. They just finished the chametz before. It's not so recommended. Again, try to get rid of the chametz and don't leave any chametz. Now, what happened if you have some crumbs of chametz that you didn't see? Anyway, we're going to cancel the chametz with our mouth on Shabbat morning. We do it a few times. Shabbat morning, after we finish eating the bread, which I'm going to explain how the meals are, we got rid of the chametz. That's it. We say in our mouth that every chametz that we may have, we are not interested in that, will be dismissed and canceled like the mud on the earth, the sand. It's sand for me. It's not chametz. That's it. I am not interested in it. The power of speech cancels the chametz. Therefore, you don't have anything to worry about. Now, let's see one thing by the order. This is, now you have to start writing it down. Please concentrate about what I said, not to make mistakes. This is, we were supposed to check with the candle, the chametz, on Friday night. But it's Shabbat, so we cannot do it. Therefore, we do it on Thursday night. Right, Bdikat chametz, the checking of the chametz is on Thursday night. What time? About half an hour after sunset. When is sunset? 7:38. So you do it at 8:20, that's the best time to do it. If you can, for whatever reason, you do it 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, but you have to do it. Now, how do you do it? Pay attention, I'm explaining. You come home, you don't sit and eat anything. You may eat fruit or drink water, but don't sit and make a meal before the Bdikat Chametz, because then you continue and you forget about it. As soon as you come home, you're not allowed to do anything. You come home, you make Netilat Yadayim. Before you do that, before you make the blessing, this is what you do. Your wife, or you, or your roommate, or whoever lives with you, take 10 little pieces of bread and put them in tin foil. Put the 10 pieces of bread in a tin foil, but close it very good that it won't come out. And the wife writes 10 corners in a house. She has to write it down because she may forget, and then now you have bread all over the house. You may not even find it in a Bdikat of Chametz. So she has to write. She put it in that closet in the right corner. She put it and she writes it down in a piece of note, on a note, and she hides 10 different pieces of bread in tin foil in a house. You come home, you take a candle. For those who don't have a candle, you cannot use the Avdala candle. You cannot use Abuka. Two mixed together. So you have to use one candle. Which candle? Any Hanukkah candle, the white candle, any candle you have. You make the bracha.
No question.
Wait, I'm going to explain. You make the bracha. Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav etzivanu al biur chametz. Al bdikat chametz. Sorry. Al bdikat chametz. Al biur chametz. That's the mitzvah of biur chametz. When you check, you make sure you biur the chametz. Then, before you prepare yourself a flashlight with working batteries. If you don't have a flashlight, go to the hardware store tomorrow and buy one. Why? Because you can't really check with a candle in our houses. In the old days, it used to be easy to check with a candle. Because which candle they had, with oil and something like this, that they carry it, it was closed, no problem. So there we cannot do it because you're going to burn your house. Because you have to go into the closet, into the corners. You have to move clothes because if you have little children, for sure you're going to find wafers in places you never dream. Under the couch, under the pillows, inside the closet, in between clothes. You'll be surprised. You're going to find chametz in places that you never dream. I'm telling you already, so I'm preparing you. Therefore, what you do, this is what you do. You make the blessing. You start one side of one room with a candle that the blessing will hold for the candle. You turn the flashlight. You shut the candle. And you continue with the flashlight. Now, a few rules that apply to this checking. It's a big mitzvah of chametz, of Bdikat chametz. You do not talk any word from the time you start until you finish. It may take 2-3 hours. If you have a big house, it may take hours. If you have a small apartment,
It may take half an hour, it depends. How many corners you have, how much stuff you have. You have to check very carefully. Then, when you finish your home, you didn't finish. You go out to the cars. The more cars you have, the more work you have. But, I have good news for you. You can use somebody else to help you. You have your brother, your friend, anyone. Your son is older than Bar Mitzvah, or your wife. Everyone stand by you when you say the bracha. You prepare two flashlights, and each one take half of the house. You do half, she does half, or whatever. It's better you do everything. But if you can, if you have friends that can come and help you to make it easier, fine. So this is the call, the mitzvah of Biur Chametz. When you finish the house, you go right outside to the car, you check in the trunk, you check under here, under there. And there, that means you have to clean your car for Chametz. I already cleaned my car. You have to clean it perfectly with a vacuum. I know there's corners you cannot reach. Don't eat your heart, because when you do the cancellation of the Chametz, the crumbs that you can reach are becoming sand. Once you say, Arei zeh ke'afra da'ara, this is sand for me, don't worry about it. But if you have pieces, cookies, wafers, pretzels, very common. If you have children, the car is full of that. So you have to make sure. Also, there's liquid Chametz on the carpets in the car. So you have to do shampoo. You get rid of it. It's called Chametz. Consider it full Chametz.
What if you have two homes?
Now, if you have two homes, that's a big issue here in the halacha. What do you do? Really, you should have done, you should go from one home to the other. Now, if the home is very close, in the same neighborhood, one bracha is good for both. But if you have to drive a long time, hours, to get to the other or to fly, then you need another blessing in a place over there. But it's really obvious that some people, let's say, have a vacation house. And obviously they go there once a year or something, and the last time they're there, it's a month before Pesach, or 3 months before Pesach. Since they know that they won't come here until the next year, which Pesach will be, they have the last time they're there, they have to make sure before they leave the house not to leave Chametz there. Or, if they have a Jew that they trust, they spend some money and he goes to clean the house and he does everything for them. It's called Shaliach. But if they didn't clean the house, and this is their house, every second is three sins from the Torah in that house. Even if they have 100 houses, they have to clean all of them, because the Torah say, in all your places, all your possessions, if you own half of the world, you have to make sure to clean half of the world. It's in your territory. Now, if you're renting from a landlord in these days now, this week, and the landlord gives you the apartment the first of the month, which let's say fall 2 days before Pesach, and it's full of bread. The guy that lives there left a lot of beers and a lot of dirt. And you got it. If you got the key in your hand, the apartment is yours, even though you're renting. The contract that you sign is nothing yet, even if you paid. As long as you didn't get the key. Once you hold the key, you pull the key, the apartment is in your territory already. Yeah, that means you are responsible to clean it. And you may get very upset that the Jew that just left this morning left it full of chametz. How did you do such a thing to me? It's your problem. So therefore, if you're smart, a few days before Pesach, you don't take it. Or you tell him, I'm only going to rent it if it's clean for Pesach 100%. And I'm only going to do the check. One of the two. But remember the rule. The key, that makes it yours. Not the contract and not the money. The key. That's it. So that's about if you have few apartments or a vacation apartment. So you clean it before, you make sure there's no chametz over there and finish. That's sometimes you leave it a few days before Pesach. It's not the time of checking chametz. It doesn't matter. You check it very good without bracha. And when you come here, you make on your place where you're going to stay in Pesach, you make the bracha over there and finish. So if you leave New York, let's say you go to Florida for Pesach, or to Israel, and you leave a few days, Tuesday, let's say. You leave before, a few days before. What do? You do the checking before you leave, the night before you leave. If you leave in the middle of the night, then you can do it that night. But most likely you will leave in a day or so. So the night before, you do the checking perfectly without bracha. Why? It's not the time for the Bikat Chametz. But you know you left the house without any Chametz in it. So, let's continue. Yes. The renting is yours. That's what I say. Once you get the key, it's yours. You live there, you rent. Renting is your home. That's it. It's absolutely your home. Yes. If you rent it out, if you give the key to a person, it's his territory. You rent it to a goy, finish. You don't have to clean. Louder, that they can hear. If the chametz
that you sell to a goy with the contract, right, like the zoo.
Yes.
The goy never has the keys to the access.
Oh, you have to give him access. Very good question. If you sell a room in your house to a goy, you have to make sure the goy has access to the house. You can lock the house and leave. It's another problem. Trust me, from experience of many years, after reviewing this from 100 times from all angles, and I know maybe that some rabbis will tell that's too extreme, trust me, 100%. From now on, try never to sell chametz to a goy ever in your life. Always get rid of it, eat it a month before Pesach, you eat it up, you leave nothing in your home, you clean the house, you do the checking, and then the last day in the morning before Pesach, you say, every chametz that I made didn't see will be dismissed and canceled like the sand on the earth, and you finish, you okay.
What if you couldn't finish everything?
A month is not enough to finish all the chametz. You get rid of it, throw it, or give it as a gift to the cleaning lady. Now we get to the burning, we didn't get to it yet. You leave something to burn, it's enough. You leave a little bit, five slices of rye bread, it's enough. You don't need to leave a whole bag. Even though I, in my house, all year, when my wife prepared the chalot, you know, there's a afrashat chala, so you take it out. Plus, there's leftover of chalot. That stay, we don't throw bread to the garbage. If you throw bread to the garbage, it ruins your parnasa. It's not good. The only way to throw bread to the garbage is when it's become green. Once it's green, it's not bread anymore. That's it. You can throw it. But as long as it looks like bread, we don't throw it. So what we do, we have a big garbage bag. And every Shabbat, we have a few pieces that the people didn't finish. We put it in that bag. And when there's the burning of chametz, they have in Mansi a big container. Everyone comes and makes a special blessing, a special blessing. We're going to talk about that burning of chametz in a second, what does it really mean. And I have a huge bag full of bread and afrashat challah, and I throw it in. And that's what we do, but you don't have to do it. If you have a little bit left, no problem. Now, when are we doing the burning of the... So remember, the checking of the chametz is around 8:15, 8:20 on Thursday night. Not Friday night, because it's Shabbat already. Thursday night. You're done with that. After checking, there is a text in the Agada of Pesach, in the beginning, in the first pages, that you're canceling the chametz. This year, it's a little bit tricky, because what's the point of canceling the chametz, knowing you're going to eat tomorrow and the next day bread? So if you forgot, it's not such a big deal. We just do it because we don't want to change the customs. Remember, the custom is a custom for over 2,000 years. Then the next morning, which is Friday morning, at the same time like every year, approximately between 10 and 11 in the morning, we take all the chametz that we clean from the house, and don't forget the vacuum cleaner bag. It's full of bread. Everyone forgets it for some reason. I'm reminding you, write it down. The vacuum cleaner, or if you have a few cleaners, or if you have a central cleaning, down in the basement, there's a container, you take it and get rid of it. And you change the bag of the vacuum cleaner. And now, you take all the chametz, and you go on Friday morning, they're going to have places here that burn the chametz. If you can't find it, you make yourself fire somewhere. If you can't make fire, the worst scenario, you don't find any fire, what do? You take it to the bathroom, make it into little pieces, crumbs, you flush the water, clean the bathroom very well, it's also good. But it's better to burn the chametz. There's many ways to get rid of it, throw it to the lake or whatever, but the best way is to burn it, actually to burn it. If you have a backyard, if you can do it in a garbage, in a metal garbage, you put some, a little bit of gas, you put some, all the bread in some papers, you burn it until it becomes black, no problem. Okay, if you can't, there will be places, I'm sure, the rabbis will tell you where they're burning the chametz, a legal place with a fire department will be there, and they put bricks around it, and everything is legal and kosher, you can do it. That's Friday morning. Now we're entering into the hardest part.
Like, the burning part, is that chametz?
No, right, once it's burned, it's not chametz, it's mud, sand, that's it.
It's dust, ashes.
Whatever you couldn't give away or eat yourself.
You're banned. You're banned. Now. Oh, we'll talk about all this. One thing at a time. We'll talk about it. Please, now we continue. One of the things you burn on Friday morning is those 10 pieces that you put in the tinfoil. You pick up those 10 pieces and you throw them also into the fire. Now, when you do the checking of the chametz, the bdikat of the chametz, you have to know, you have to check in every hole, every shelf, every possible place that bread could have reached there. But you have, if you have an attic, and you know for sure no one goes up there, nobody, and the children cannot go there, then you don't have to check. If you know for sure you never got any food up there, you don't have to check. Don't just check for the fun. But if there's a possibility that you went up with a sandwich or a wafer or something in your mind, that's it, you gotta check the whole place now. Because maybe you left it there. Now, so remember, prepare the flashlight. There's something that you may forget. So you make the blessing, Asher kidishanu l'mitzvotah v'tzivanu al be'ur chametz. Not al b'rikat chametz, al be'ur chametz. Be'ur chametz. In English it sounds like this. Al, A-L, be'ur, B-E-U-R, be'ur, be'ur chametz. Chametz, C-H-A-M-E-Z, chametz. Or T-S is better in the end instead of Z. Okay, now. If the phone is ringing, you're not allowed to pick up in the middle of the checking. The only thing you're allowed to say, let's see, you and your wife checking or whatever, so you tell, did you check that room? Did you put in this room? Something that connects to the bdika, you can talk. But everything else you cannot talk. Why? Because once you made the blessing, the mitzvah did not finish until you finish the house and the cup. As long as you do it, that means you didn't finish the mitzvah. You cannot talk until you finish the mitzvah. The only thing you can talk is something that connects to the mitzvah. Did you get that bread? Or do you have another flashlight? Or something that connects to the mitzvah? If you have no choice, you talk.
When you say chametz, you're talking about bread products, like jelly that doesn't take...
Oh, we'll get to it now. Now, thank you for reminding me. Now, there's another habit that the people have, which is also, it's just panicking. It's not really necessary what the people do. The people, when they sell things to the goy, they put half of the house in a few closets and they sell it to them. Tuna, this, that, what for? It's not chametz. Now you should know one thing. Every can that you have, tuna, pickles, olives, whatever you have, even though it doesn't say kosher for Passover or kasher lePesach, doesn't mean it's chametz. In the ingredients, it doesn't have any wheat or barley or anything, excuse me, or anything like that, or no flour or no wheat starch or none of that things that is chametz. In this case, you're not allowed to eat it, but you can keep it in a closet and close it. But you don't have to